Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
It's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are The Elsi Nehangano, The Osherero Omaimburiro, The Catholic Simane Kakarunga, The Afrikaans Sing Voor Diere, and many more.
All right, the time is 1 minute in the office o'clock, and it's the 4th of June, 2025. I greet all the Eagle FM listeners from all the 14 regions and those listening also to us from abroad. We appreciate you for always tuning in and choosing us every day. So welcome to another edition of Early Morning Scoop, where we inform you and of course update you on economics, entrepreneurship and trade policy until the hour of 7:30. So I'm your host, Lois Ashimi, and I'll be with you until the hour of 7:30, providing you just that content. But before diving into the latest economic developments across the Africa, please be sure to connect with us on social media platform or media. Follow Eagle FM Namibia on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. You can also keep up with the Village Newspaper page on its respective social media channels. That is Facebook, Instagram, and of course the channel. Please not forget to follow us or rather subscribe the channel, the WhatsApp channel that is Eagle FM Media House or Eagle Media House. Then of course you can able to catch up on the newspaper or rather on the Yes newspaper alerts and of course the daily news update. And please don't forget also to download the Eagle FM app. Very important. You can able to catch up on whether it's a live show or rather it's podcast or past shows. You can able to tune in any day. So also please do not forget to download the Imba app. You find that also on Google Play Store and of course the App Store. And to start on the international segment is that as South Africans' air quality fails to meet the World Health Organization, that is WHO, standards. Now, this is according to a report released by the environmental group Greenpeace Africa and the Center of Research on Energy and Clean Air. Now, the two entities have called for an end to exemption and, of course, delay in compliance granted to Eskom as well as other polluters in South Africa's minimum emission standards. We might take a listen to this news.
Power is the single largest source of ambient particulate matter 2.5. According to the latest report by environmental group Greenpeace Africa and the Center for Research on Energy and Clean Air, these airborne particles are responsible for 42,000 deaths, including 1,300 deaths of children under 5 years.
Exposure to this pollutant leads to 42,000 premature deaths every single year. Tragically, this includes the death of 1,300 children under the age of 5.
Air pollution is often referred to as an invisible killer, and it is this report It is in this report that we make, you know, this devastating impact visible.
According to the report, the estimated total annual economic cost of health impacts caused by PM2.5 pollution is 960 billion. The particles can cause illnesses such as respiratory infections, heart diseases, dementia and stroke, among others. The most affected areas are in Gauteng within the Highveld area, where the exposure levels are more than double the national standard and 9 to 10 times higher than the World Health Organization guidelines. The Northwest, Free State and Mpumalanga provinces also have doubled the national rate of PM2.5. This has led to stillborns, miscarriages and poor health among adversely affected communities.
Looking at the findings of the report, I wouldn't be shocked, but I am disappointed because I know that there are more deaths in my community that link to air pollution than that is being covered in these reports.
I just wanted to recommend this report because it's one of a good tool or resource that we use when we lobby decision makers like policy implementers and developers in the fossil fuel industry.
Activists have called on government to try and meet the National Ambient Air Quality Standard to decrease the PM2.5 particles attributable to deaths in most affected provinces. Offences Timo, SAB.
All right, there you have it in South Africa, actually. So now to move on to the next item is that authorities are urging donors nations to step in as severe funding cuts, threatening support at the Kakuma refugee camp. We may take a listen to this.
Sat down with the
many, many years. But in the past couple of years, we've had to move that food basket into 40% of a minimum recommended food basket. And now in June, for the first time, I think in the history of both of the camps in Dadaab and Kakuma, we're going to have to go down to a 28% of the recommended food basket. We've never been that low. And so we can tell you what might be the impacts, but we've never seen the full impact. This is devastating. But we've seen over time a reduction in donor interest. The real crisis this year was a severe reduction in the food aid of USAID, and we all know that story, of the United States, and they were the largest donor. Up to 70% of that food basket came from the United States. So this has had a severe impact, and then because of all the things we know in the international news, several other donors followed suit. And we already have severe cases of malnutrition in Kakuma. If you go to the IRC Stabilization Hospital, you will see them every single day. But the number of those cases will increase incredibly.
And what steps are being taken to bridge these funding gaps?
It's not only just an African problem, it's a global problem. And right now, I don't see a clear solution. But what I do know is if countries start to put forward resources like the ones we've had traditionally in Kakuma and Dadaab, normally it takes 6 months for them to reach us. So we would have to be signing contracts today with whatever donor for it to then, if they're doing food aid, to be shipped to Mombasa and then carried up to the camps. So I can already tell you today that January looks very, very severe. Now, one other thing that can help us and we can move much faster is if we receive cash assistance. It allows us to put money directly to people's phones very, very quickly. But we still need a cash resource in order to do that. And right now, we don't see those resources in the pipeline. So I'm not quite sure. I'm not optimistic for the future. We can kind of as you do at home when you're short on budget and short on food in the cupboard, you can extend it and stretch it as much as possible. But at some point, the most vulnerable population will no longer have food in kind or food in cash. It can mean theft of commodities. It can mean conflict. So what we really need to do is think about the wider ramifications. And
all right, there you have it. The time is 10 minutes in the office of 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. And to move on to the next item in Zambia is that the Food Reserve Agency has this year set 340 kwacha per 50 kilogram bag as its price for buying maize. Now the FRA board chairperson says the price was set following the wide consultation with key stakeholders. Now the key stakeholders includes the Ministry of Agriculture, Zambia National Farmer Union, and the Millers Association of Zambia, Zambia Cooperative Federation, and of course Grain Traders Association. We might take a lesson.
24 has finally arrived to get the 2024-2025 farming season its conclusion. The agency has released the buying price for the maize at 340 kwacha per 50 kilogram bag and 300 per 40 kilogram of paddy rice for the 2025 crop marketing season.
We'll first target to buy 543,000 metric tons of maize. 543,000 metric tons of maize and 10,000 metric tons of rice.
Mr. Desai has encouraged small-scale farmers to reserve some produce for their household food security.
The Food Reserve Agency shall buy non-genetically modified grade A white maize from farmers at 6 kwacha and 18 ngwe. 6 kwacha 80 ngwe per kilogram, which translates into 340 kwacha per 50 kg bag.
Acting FRIA Executive Director Justin Chunka says the agency consulted widely before setting the price for maize. And National Association for Smallholder Farmers Executive Director Frank Kajula says farmers have been eagerly waiting for the price.
The price that you have given us is supposed to help the smallholder farmers actually to come back into life, into farming as a business. And we are hoping that the farmers are going to take this beautiful announcement, this beautiful price that we have been given, to ensure that they make the money that they need to make.
Millers and grain traders have welcomed the FRIA buying price for maize and paddy rice.
It's a good price, especially considering the fact that we are expecting a bumper harvest this year. And that should also reflect that we need to encourage the farmers to grow more. So the only way we can encourage the farmer to grow more is by ensuring that you're giving them a good price. And that is a price that has been announced today. That entails that we should also expect, if all things being equal, that we should have a good, you know, production even coming in the next coming season.
What is also important to note, colleagues, is that they've announced that they're only going to buy, I think for the start, or let me just put it that way, this is what is in the yellow book. They're only going to buy 543,000 metric tons out of the 3,655,000. So that leaves us with 1.1 plus million metric tons as private sector.
The agency has set up 1,428 satellite depots across.
All right, there you have it. Now to move on to the next item is that the South African economy edged out a growth of 0.1% in the first 3 months of the year. Now that's largely thanks to the agriculture, fishery and forest industry that grew 15.8% 0.8% over the quarter, contributing 0.4 percentage point to growth. Now, however, the mining industry was one of the main drag to the economy, seeing substantial growth over the period.
Economy edged out growth of 0.1, fishery and forestry industry that grew both. However, the mining industry was the period.
The South African economy is stuck in a cycle of stagnation. It grew by a marginal 0.1% in the first 3 months of the year. Agriculture was once again the shining star, contributing 0.4 percentage points to growth after growing by 15.8%.
This was largely due to increased economic activity reported in horticulture as well as animal products.
Beekeeper and founder of Bongi Bees, launched in 2018, Lulu Letlape, says bees play an important role in this.
Without bees, we don't have food. So bees, there are many pollinators, but bees pollinate almost 70% of the crops. So we need bees. I mean, there's an assumption or saying that if we don't have bees, we'll have about 30 days and then everybody will go hungry.
While welcoming the 0.1% growth, she highlights that investments in growing businesses like hers could go a long way in further boosting growth in the agricultural sector. Gross fixed capital formation decreased by 1.7% over the period, contributing negative 0.2 of a percentage point to growth.
For example, the infrastructure that gets supported by big companies. Mm-hmm. So that is important, working together with big companies and small companies to develop the economy.
Meanwhile, while agriculture and three other sectors were in the green over the quarter, several are still stuck in the red.
Mining and quarry, it went down 4.1%. This was largely due to the decline that was driven by lower production levels for the platinum group metals.
At the same time, in Kendal, Sicco Mining Services Finance Director Fungai Blake says the muted growth in the industry over the past few months is due to a number of factors.
Things such as, obviously, there's greater environmental accountability. So, you know, just navigating through that. There's been a lot of commodity price fluctuations. We know what's happening in the global economy, you know, the tariffs, etc. And it just affects a lot of different things.
But she's buoyant. Things will soon turn around.
Thinking about doing things differently, how do we extract value, make sure that we supply our markets the product that they want. I think if we continue to do that, we'll continue to, you know, navigate the challenges and hopefully grow.
Maluleke.
All right, there you had it. And now to move on to the next item is that economists have cautiously welcomed the GDP leading, saying it reflects resilience amid global uncertainty. We might take a listen to this.
The GDP reading, saying it reflects resilience amid global uncertainty. Much of a gain does a 0.1% GDP reading represent in an economy such as South Africa?
Well, the resilience question, I think, sort of misses the point. This is far too weak to allow for any decent employment growth to have a dent in unemployment. Investments are going in the wrong direction. Investments as a share of GDP is actually falling back as opposed to rising as the government would like it to. And so, yes, in a very difficult world, you know, it's maybe better than it otherwise could be. But this certainly is not growth that delivers anything the country particularly needs. And the recovery ultimately remains exceptionally uneven.
On the back of that, the near-term outlook, on the other hand, remains moderate. Is that a fair assessment given the domestic and global economic challenges?
Well, we have these countervailing forces. We have a lot of reform going on to logistics, to electricity, to water, to a whole load of other things that are going to take a long time really to feed through until into higher potential growth that can lift growth maybe in the very long term up to, say, 2.5%. But that's probably 5 years or so out. And in the interim, we're going to have a glide higher. We're at 1% for full year growth this year, which actually implies a rise in the unemployment level versus last year. But at the same time, we have obviously a very uncertain global environment, huge volatility in terms of global sentiment, given what the US is doing on trade policy around tariffs, and generally a weaker global growth backdrop as well. So really, this is a push and pull between these longer-term positive factors and these shorter-term external negative factors.
What then is to be said about the views shared by global bodies, including the IMF and the World Bank, as they too have lowered South Africa's growth prospects?
So there is a tussle going on. I think it's interesting to think back to the start of this year where we were all talking about maybe quarterly growth in Q1 being 0.6, 0.7. That was revised heavily down there. Then obviously this 1.1% print that came out today. And remember, people have come down from 2% expectations for full year growth this year. The IMF's now at 0.9. We're at 1%. Treasury was at 1.4% in budget 3.0 2 weeks ago. And really, risks around our own forecast are probably marginally to the downside. It relies on a recovery in the second half of the year that could be at risk and is somewhat uncertain. So still, I think, from particularly Treasury, some further revisions down to go.
Speaking of budget 3.0 and national treasury, how can South Africa safeguard against the economic contraction, especially as the delayed budget saw that drop in sentiment around political and fiscal stability?
Well, there's a real tension going on here between potential downside in revenue collection because of lower growth versus a much more productive SARS and SARS that's obviously been invested in, National Treasury putting in $7 billion into SARS over 3 years. And basically what we're seeing is that in our forecast, we're actually seeing less revenue underneath everything being collected by Treasury, by SARS, but then them doing a better job at that in a low growth environment. So we don't necessarily massively disagree with Treasury's revenue numbers despite having a weaker growth outlook. But it's this tension that's hardly ideal. Ultimately, you would far rather be thinking about revenue surprising on the upside as opposed to wondering if it's going to surprise on the downside.
Thank you.
All right, there you had it. The time is 21 minutes in the hour of 6 o'clock and this early morning skip. Now to move on to the next item is that Zambia and the Democratic Republic of Congo in talks for the creation of joint authority to manage the Raupula River and the Lake Mweru.
Zambia and the Democratic Republic of Congo, DRC, are back at the negotiating table to discuss the creation of a joint authority that will manage the Luapula River and Lake Mweru. This project, known as the Luapula River and Lake Mweru Authority, will help both countries work together on things like clean water, electricity, farming, fishing, and protecting the environment along the shared border. The meeting taking place in Lusaka is the third round of technical talks. The discussions are building on earlier progress with support from the United Nations Water Convention team. So, what's really going on? The goal is to create one official body that helps both countries manage the river and the lake instead of working separately. The river has a huge potential to generate hydroelectricity enough to power both countries and reduce blackouts. A 2019 study estimated up to 627 megawatts could be generated, especially from places like Mumbotuta and Mambirima. The lake supports thousands of fishermen, but overfishing is a problem. By working together, Zambia and DRC hope to protect the fish and boost food security. Zambia's government first proposed this joint authority years ago and has been working with international experts to move in forward. In fact, ZESCO Limited and DRC's power utility SNEL already signed agreements to develop power projects in the area. The idea isn't just about water and power. It's all about improving cooperation, development, and peace between the two countries that share natural resources. Right now, the Luapula River is especially important as Zambia comes out of serious drought challenge that reduced hydropower and affected food production. The country is looking at all options to make better use of its water. The joint authority would help manage the river fairly between Zambia and DRC, support new hydropower projects, encourage better fishing, farming, and water use.
All right, there you have it. Now to move on to the next item is that Nigeria is set to embark on a groundbreaking partnership with China to drive the adoption of electric vehicles in the country. Now the Chinese ambassador to Nigeria revealed plans to establish EV factories and other manufacturing ventures in Nigeria through collaboration between the two nations.
It's putting more interest in electric vehicles, with EV users like Kabir Shitu already enjoying lower running costs.
My petrol car is about 70 liters, which cost me about a little above 60,000. And that will probably do like 400 kilometers. While my EV is 570 kilometer range. So if I fully charge it at home, though slow, that will cost me like 24,000. In a public place, maybe like 32,000-33,000, but that would still take me Kaduna back. So I would say EV is better.
Mantim Kumswa doesn't just own an EV. He also runs Nigeria's first solar-powered EV charging hub and assembles cars locally. He says demand is growing and welcomes China's move, partnering with Nigeria to build EV plants. For him, Nigeria's current infrastructure is enough for only now.
You don't need a special infrastructure for you to be able to power your electric vehicles. You can just ride on your existing infrastructure. So, of course, if we can have improved grid supply, that would be good. But even with our current grid supply, if they can just improve on the number of hours we can get power supply, even with our epileptic power supply, even with our irregular power supply and irregular voltage, it can still charge your EVs.
But Nigeria still pours billions into petrol projects. That raises concerns about the country's commitment to electric vehicles and its climate responsibilities.
We're either consuming internally as a country or we're exporting to the international market. The international market will continuously demand for our petroleum products. So it's not a ratio, okay, what are we consuming? What is available for us to export, right? And this does not in any way affect the EV industry.
Nigeria aims to sell only zero emission vehicles by 2040. China's factories could speed that up with jobs, local assembly, and cheaper cars. But
right there, you had it. Now to move on to the last item of the day is that from international side of it is that the economists have cautiously welcomed the marginal economic growth in the first quarter of this year. Now the 0.1 raise in South Africa's gross domestic product beat the market forecast of zero growth, or rather construction. Now agriculture was the biggest driver of growth, with the sector surging by 15.8% due to the increased activity in animal production.
A modest improvement in agricultural conditions, weather rebound, so a modest improvement in production conditions that saw harvest outlook relatively on a better footing relative to last year. You'd recall that last year we came from a very devastating drought situation that saw about 22% drop in agricultural harvest, especially the summer crops. But if you look at the current situation, we saw increases in production, and we're also seeing across the board with animal production recovering from diseases that we saw previously. So an increase, and both on a volume plus price situation, on average over 5% increase in prices of meat in the first quarter. So that were the factors that actually improved the situation on the quarterly agricultural GDP. On the export front, we saw an increase in exports of almost 10% year on year relative to last year, and that indicates a good fit on the agricultural side.
Positive gains, but let's also talk about the sustainability thereof in activity within the agricultural sector, especially when we look at the global economic landscape and the dynamics around tariffs. But also, we just heard earlier today a confirmation of a foot and mouth disease at Curran Beef. Talk to us about what then becomes the near-term outlook.
Yeah, obviously, from a production perspective, we are not worried, really. This year is going to be an excellent year from a production perspective. Obviously, from a trade perspective, we're worried about, global, developments, especially with regard to, directions tariffs are taking.
At my age, you start appreciating things you might have taken for granted before, like good health. I've known from early on that donating blood regularly was indeed good for my health. I'm too old now, but I've done my part in saving hundreds of lives while benefiting my own. You see, my risk of a heart attack, stroke, and cancer was always low because I donated blood.
Call NHP on 061-285-5400. We're about you.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next week.
Tariffs into the US, which will affect the, South African agriculture, especially Western Cape and Northern Cape, citrus, nuts, and wines. Obviously, after July, we will get an indication of what, direction this will take. And which may mean a redirection to other markets. But also that, some of the produce is, a need in the US. Some of the, tariff increases might be absorbed by, the US consumer. On the disease front, in terms of, foot and mouth disease, it is almost becoming a new normal, with foot and mouth disease in the country. We've been with it for quite some time now, and I think we need urgency in terms of ensuring that we have a long-term situation to resolve it, because it impacts on the ability to actually export, given the potential for this industry to bring about growth and necessary, employment and export value. As you are aware, China has imposed a ban on exports, and this development on one of the exporters, Curran, it's actually worrying. But obviously, we're looking forward to a containment of the situation and a recovery.
Lastly, looking at the South African growth and the economic activity so far in the year of 2025, is there still confidence that the basic, structural key in industries will be able to weather any type of storm given from the domestic or the global challenges that you've already highlighted on?
Yes, we've seen that, the global, South Africa's economy is quite pedestrian at the moment. But there's a potential for a spurt of growth in some sectors. And thanks to, the Reserve Bank's, cutting interest rate 25 basis points, that will go a long way in, improving confidence in the country, but also, ensuring that, the consumers, welfare is actually improved and we get the traction in consumption. And obviously, it all depends on what happens on the global market. We have got quite a number of challenges, apart from, trade issues. There is a renewed escalation of tensions, although there are some talks to resolve the situation in the Middle East and also in Russia, Ukraine. Is still, very fluid, in terms of resolution. But obviously that, is something that we have to monitor, going forward. We need that kind of confidence and certainty to ensure that, the economy can start, functioning normally. But I think, what is important is, homegrown, in terms of, changes on, or transformation in the economy. The necessary changes that are required to ensure that we have good traction, we have got services being restored, we've got services being improved to ensure that we
we can move, produce out of the country, but also costs are minimized given the current situation that is quite dire.
Thank you for your contribution. Paul Makube is a...
All right, there you have it. The time is 34 minutes in the office o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. We can take a listen to a very short commercial break, then once we return, we'll take you through the local news. Stay tuned.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6%, is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Back your preconceptions of technology.
All right, welcome back. And if you just joined us right now, thank you so much for joining us. And a very good morning to you once more. And this is Early Morning Scoop. This is a show where we inform you about the economic news, entrepreneurship. We look at also the trade policies. To start off, is that the Vongo Vongo Green Scheme in Kavango East is currently operating at just 50% capacity due to the magic delay in the assessing essential farming equipment. Now, farm manager Afrolis Smith revealed this on Monday during a visit by the village newspaper. Now, Smith raised concern about the mounting losses with large quantity of maize still unharvested in the fields. Now, the farm cultivates 310 hectares of maize, catering to both commercial and small-scale farmers. Now, although the necessary budgets have been approved, the procurement and delivery of equipment remain delayed. Now, Smith stressed that his team is ready to ramp up operation, but warned that without urgent support, Namibia could miss its critical food security targets. Now, the maize is ready to harvest and extremely dry, but since we don't have our own combined harvester, it will remain in the field until we receive one from Hoogfontein. That's what Smith said. Now, on reaching out to nearby agribusiness, he was told that they are also busy harvesting. I called them in Hoogfontein, but they told me they are still using the harvester. That means we have to wait for them to finish before we can assess it. That is what he said. Now, Smith emphasized the ripple effects those delays have on the entire production cycle. If I plant only half the farm with maize, I get only half the production. And even then, if I can't harvest in that time, which also have happened already, I miss the window to plant wheat. Now, that's what he said. Now, due to the late maize harvest, this also affected the planting of winter crops. Now, ideally, I would be using the entire farm for wheat right after the maize, but because the maize is still in the field, we have to borrow a combined harvester. Now the delays everything. Now the same issue repeats itself in December. That's what he said. Now Smith explained that this scheme had its own combine They could also clear the fields, plant wheat on time and run full cycles, planting delayed and the next season compromised. That's what he stated. Now, Smith also expressed disappointment that they can only operate at 50% of the scheme despite the potential to go in full production. Now, Smith added that 166 hectares will be used for wheat cultivation with this winter, and planting has already begun. Now, seven center pivots located near the daily section of the farm are part of ongoing efforts to expand crop production, he added. Now, the team is currently planting wheat while also leveling land and preparing irrigation system to function efficiently. In response, Deputy Agriculture Minister Ruth Mashake advised the manager to consider other options such as renting or rather borrowing a combined harvester to prevent further crop loss. Now, we'll also assist in sourcing information on how the farm can easily access combined harvester. We cannot allow all the hard work done by the farmers to go to waste. That's what she said. Now, she also promised to engage with the executive director of the ministry to explore long-term solution for smooth and timely crop production. So most of those green scheme in the Kavango region are facing severe shortage of essential farming tools, which continue to hinder agricultural production. Now, one of those most critical missing tools is the combined harvester, whose unavailability is significantly limiting output across the region schemes. Now, to move on to the next item is that the National Council Standing Committee of Economics and Public Accounts said that the agro-processing project and by the states are good initiatives for the upliftment of living standards and the improvement of socio-economic dimensions in the country. Now, according to the committee, the project were also supposed to promote economic growth through the aspects of value addition, manufacturing, and enhance local supply side capacity, as well as better coordinating and collaboration between all the role players in the Namibian economy. Now, however, it has been noted that agro-processing projects under the government have faced a higher level of negligence in operations and management, now delaying the country's efforts in developing the agriculture value chain. Now, various commercial farmers and, of course, small-scale farmers produce plenty of horticultural products. However, the country has not invested enough in agro-processing at a large scale. Now, in line to this, my colleague Joseph Jeremiah brought this, or rather will bring this update. We might take a listen.
We have seen that most of state projects have been failing, and it's due to this. Do we say it's mismanagement, or now, in your own view, what critical interventions needed to transform Namibia's agro-processing sector from a hit and miss to a consistent success?
Okay, so in my own view, because it's a basic principle and it's a basic fundamental. Mm. The state must run its own economy. We cannot allow a private sector to run the economy. Mm. Because a private sector will run it according to its terms. So the state must get involved. Getting involved, we have to start from the basic. We have to start from growing. So that means the state must capacitate itself towards developing a lot of projects that involve agro-processing. And this starts from plantation, harvesting water, or looking for available sources of water that you can use to do plantations. What are you going to do here? You're going to employ people. Who's going to pay them? The state is going to pay these people. From there, you cultivate new package and new process and add value to this product. You as a state are not giving out tenders. You as a state, you buy equipment, you build factories, and in this building of factories, you are going to employ people and you are going to grow your economy. You process goods. You as a state, you must process goods and you package goods. And these goods that are packaged, you as the state, you have to sell the goods and return of revenue. And after earning this revenue, you are going to have enough money to build free houses for your people. You are going to have enough money to build roads. You are going to have enough money to support the vulnerable and ensure that everyone is covered within the economy. And that's the only way the state is going to employ the unemployed. That's the only time the state is going to assist or help it grow its own economy by even distributing outside the country, because they are the custodians of the agro-processing. Because they are the custodians of the agro-processing within the country. So it's going to grow the economy only if the state is doing it.
Okay.
And agriculture is the basic concept, because but when you don't have food, let's call you a failed state. Because when you don't have food, you are going to accept any terms and conditions that are going to come for the person that's going to offer you food. I would say we need to, as a state, we need to focus on institutionalizing our agricultural and agro-processing projects. But don't only grow and do this, two or three projects, because the demand is quite high. If you look at Pick and Pay, if you just look at your nation, where do they go buy food? They go and buy straight in Pick and Pay. Who is applying Pick and Pay? Someone outside the country or individuals in something away where they have farms. What is so difficult for the government to do that? ShopRite, that's where everyone is going to eat. Do we have a state? Do we have a state? Do we have a state store where they are able to earn revenue? We don't have. They have a 50-50, I don't know if it's world man drug share. But the state needs to be the custodian of that. You need to ensure that you sell food to your people, even at an affordable price. You need to ensure that you capture your own agro-processing industry and run it. It must run at a cost that is affordable to people, and not to raise the bars of prices anytime we want in the private sector. And that's what's happening now. People are suffering their hang of hunger because they cannot afford food. Food is not locally produced. We are importing it. What about processing it here? It's going to be less expensive because we didn't have all those imports and all this transport that we need to put in place when we are importing. It needs to be, the value needs to be added here, and not a value of two goods. We need to add more goods. We need to be the custodians of our agro-processing information. And that can only be at the forefront of the state. The Ministry of Agriculture needs to do a lot. It needs to do a lot.
Mr. Shibali, I just have one last question for you, and I don't know if I'm the only person that was thinking of this, or you probably had bumped into it as well. It's not just us as Namibia, but let's say Africa, or probably the whole world, where we have things that look great in black and white. Things that look great in black and white. Ideas are looking very brilliant. On paper, they are brilliant. But when it comes to putting them in motion, that's where the difficult part comes in.
Yes. It's really there, but to tell the truth, Africans are still under the control of the owners of the money.
Mm.
And that's what is causing us, and that's what is depressing us as Africans. Because when colonialism happened, is to ensure that we never produce anything for ourselves. We are unable. They implemented a system. There's a system in place that ensures that we become consumers and we become people that work for the providers of food.
Mm.
Look at this perspective. There are a lot of young, brilliant minds within the youth. But implementing it is cost that you need to put in place.
Mm.
It's cost, it's money that you need to come up to scout or to get. Go to the bank and tell this young, brilliant guy to start a business, to look for a loan to start a business.
Mm.
Definitely they are going to ask for collaterals. Mm. Where are the collaterals for this young boy or for this young girl? They don't have anything to offer to the bank to give them money to start. The other thing is, it's mostly the system that is in place that's avoiding us. And look at what's happening in Burkina Faso. They started doing everything on their own, and the imperial forces, they are against it, because that's not what they want. They want us to be the consumers of their agro-processing. So they want us to be consumers of what they are producing. But the moment we start producing our own goods, then we become bad people to them, because they know that they are not going to earn the revenue that they need to grow their economies. So it's a very big problem whereby we don't tackle the system itself. And that's not going to keep us hungry, because the moment we don't tackle that system that's set in place by communism, because everyone is facing the other side, and we don't come together to ensure that we destroy the system. The financial architecture is one of the main things that's giving us trouble as Africans. And the financial architecture was designed in such a system that even if we try to come up with our own currencies, we are deemed as weak. Our currencies, we don't have enough of the US dollars. So we need to earn more of the US dollars to ensure that we grow our economy. But how are you going to earn more of US dollars to grow your economy if you don't produce your own food that you need to eat, or that you need to sell out to America or to other countries for you to earn that US dollar? So it's more of coming together as Africans, and we reform the system that's in place, and show that we produce our own food. We must start processing everything here. Yes, you said implementation is the problem.
Mm.
Taking steps by steps is what is lacking in our people, because we have failed to understand the system that is set in place by colonialism. And that's what Traoré is against.
Mm.
See what Traoré is doing?
Yes.
That's what he's going against, the system. So in Namibia, if you look at your people, everyone wants to start a business. Almost everyone is in tendering now.
Mm.
So everyone is trying to tender, but they don't have money to finish the project. And then when they get the little money, what do? They squander it. Because we are a hungry nation of pick and pay, shop right, and expensive cars. Mm?
Mm.
We have brilliant minds here, but the system, people are sitting on a system that is very wrong. The state is sitting on a system that is very wrong. And they need to reform it for them to be implementation.
Mm-hmm.
We are sitting on regulations that were set in place that if you get embed to a shop, it's not according to the standards of shop right. And shop right, and we have been sitting on this embed for long. Mm-hmm. That is not meeting the standards of ShopRite that's written by someone who doesn't eat MB.
Mm.
It's systems in place that you need to reform. You start producing your goods here, you want to sell them in ShopRite. ShopRite will not allow you to sell them. They say it's not compliant to our standards. Yeah. So it's more of systematic issues that you need to solve as Africans to ensure that we implement. And this is a colonial system in place. Yes. The other thing is more of partnership within us as Africans. We lack partnerships. We lack working together. We want to eat on our own. I would say, look at a country like Namibia and a country like South Africa. What, there's a lot of things that South Africa can do to add value on our goods. Yeah, but look, where do we go and look for value addition? Look at oil. Where do you want to go? Outside Africa, for that matter. Why don't we come together as Africans and say, okay, Ghana is able to do processing of oil. Why can't we talk with Ghana and they come to Namibia and we partner together and do processing of oil and then we distribute between Ghana and other countries? So we don't like working together, even in our small scale as people in the country. Yeah? You can grow maize. But your friend just next door, you know, he has a factory of processing it into powder, into flour to eat as a meal. The other one is able to make porridge out of your flour, which is sold in the shop as instant. But everyone is just on their private, and they are just far apart from each other. So we need to get the spirit of togetherness, Ubuntu spirit that we knew back then in Africa. So we need to get that spirit of Ubuntu so that we can start working together, merge our mind and start exploring our creativity. And that is the main big the next big thing. We accept a standard of not exploring our creativity. So we have a brain of waiting for someone to do it for us. As Africans, that's why we don't implement things. They are there. We write them on paper, but we are waiting for someone to come and do them for us.
Exactly.
Taking actions to do it, to explore your own creativity. And I always say, us as Africans being taught to read and write, and we never went out the boundaries of reading and writing. It's more of us being captured mentally, intellectually, to someone's discoveries. And that's where our mind ends. You know and understand whatever in the textbook. That is, I tell you, go out the textbook. Go out of this textbook to come up with something. You're never going to come up with something until you read in that book. But to get out your brain, let it function, explore, get out your creativity to do something. We are not at that level. Not because we don't need to be there. We are stuck in the system that was set. And that's the system of educating us just to work and not for us to produce. I always have an idea that if VTC was our primary education, was our basic education, when we go to varsity, we could have been adding a lot on our primary education, and imagine the number of products, new products that we could have been developing in this country. It could have been a lot of products, and not us being admins, sitting in offices and just channeling money out of the offices and waiting for a salary to come at the month end. We could have been people that are involved in day-to-day processing of products. Yeah, I think those are my main three topics on implementing our ideas that we always have in white and black.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Shimbali, for having me interview you.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you to your listeners. I think we can have more of this conversation.
We really need to.
Okay.
Have a blessed day, Ayed.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Right, there you have it by Afrim Shimbali, just emphasizing that we need to be, rather to start on doing things on ourselves and not depend on other countries, on other people to do things for us, especially when it comes to processing products. And of course, to move on to the next item is that unemployed teachers marched yesterday to the Ministry of Education, Innovation, Youth, Sports, Arts and Culture, just to submit their petition. Now, my colleague, Nilu Nanye, Michael Petru, spoke with the teachers to share their views on this protest and what they want the Ministry of Education to implement, to ensure they are being considered. We might take a listen.
Hey listeners, we are once again joined together with the unemployed graduate teachers here at the Ministry of Education, and today we are joined by
Dumini Martin.
Please, could you tell us what you are here for?
Actually, we are just here to submit our concern, and the matter that we are not subscribing to interviews any longer, or otherwise. Job provision must be transparent and such that every graduate must be employed, especially teachers. Let me say, for instance, in my case, I've been 2 years unemployed, but I attended several interviews, like multiples of them, but there wasn't anything positive coming out. What does this show? This symbolizes that there is no proper alignment within the ministry's interview structures. So what we are saying, the interviews must be totally abolished, or the Ministry of Education must find a proper contact of in a recruiting system.
Now, Mr. Martin, like, what specific challenges have you faced, you know, emotionally, financially, or socially as a qualified teacher who cannot find work?
As a qualified teacher, especially, I need future. When I was studying, I was studying with the purpose that I must study to graduate, to get a job, to get better off my family. And surprisingly, this is the situation I'm in. Stress. I'm just not coping. And it is very, 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 very much it's a tough task.
Now, how do you feel seeing, you know, classrooms overcrowded and understaffed while you and many others remain at home?
That knowing that classrooms are understaffed. And such that I am homesteaded. It's a brutal pain, man. And just a sign that something somewhere in the system is unright. So little I could say is that, interviews must be totally abolished. Imagine, for instance, the minister himself or herself didn't get any interview to that position. But why do you think is the best for us teachers to be interviewed to get job, while you as a minister we didn't see you being interviewed, we didn't see any interview of yourself neither. So how does that, it's senseless. It's senseless.
Now again, since you're calling for the removal of, you know, job interviews in favor of a database system, can you explain why you believe this current recruitment system is unfair?
Numbers don't lie. You can tell by seeing the majorities of teachers there. You are hearing stories in newspapers of bribes. The thing's quite unfair.
Mm-hmm.
Bribes everywhere, corruption everywhere. Numbers don't lie.
Yeah.
You can see for yourself then. The system is still corrupt.
Yeah. So finally, what message would you like to send to the, you know, Ministry of Education and the government through this protest?
The message to the government is that we are tired.
Mm-hmm.
We are hopeless in them. And we feel they do not care at all with us. So they must find proper strategies to find employment for us, or else their offices might shut down. If the office is not working, if you do not have any plan and you are in the office, you must be removed.
Yeah,
you must get out of the office. That is it.
Okay.
Yeah, we're not beating around.
My name is Yoni Haukongo. I'm a qualified unemployed teacher. We are here at the Ministry of Education in Windhoek.
Now, Sioni, when it comes to, you know, actively searching for employment, you know, attending interviews, submitting applications and waiting for, you know, responses, what has the process been like for you? What are the challenges you're facing?
Oh, the challenges are a lot. Imagine making copies. You are, maybe there is a post that you can apply for, like, you can have even 10 posts that you can apply. And imagine you are making copy. The qualification that you have, you have to make each copy of that so that you can apply for that. And then the money that is costing for copy is a lot. And when you are traveling for the interview, like for me, I'm based in Windhoek, but I have to travel for mostly at the north because I'm Oshiwambo speaking. I have to travel for Windhoek. Imagine you are going to the north and you have almost 5 to 6 interviews at the same day. At the same day, 5 interviews. You are human. You are sleeping at the service station. You did not bath. And you have to go to that interview that day when the bus drop you at the service station. You sleep there. You wait for the morning time. You go for the interview. Not even bath. You just go there because you don't know anybody there. You have to go for the interview. Maybe because some of the interview, 2 of them, they are at the same time. At the end, you maybe just attend only 2 for that day. And then you have to come back to Windhoek so that you can maybe, because here in Windhoek is where we struggle for the living. You have to come back to Windhoek, and the kids are here. You have to go back. To come back to Windhoek. And then when you reach Windhoek, at the following day, people are calling for the interview still at the north. Maybe that day it can be Ohangwena, Oshana, at the different. And then you have to spend a lot of money for the interview. We are tired. We do not have money. We don't have money.
Now, following that, despite years now of being overlooked, what continues to drive you to show up, you know, and protest and, you know, again, advocate for your right to work in this profession?
It's for me, it's for us. We are tired. That's why we take this so that we can make this, demonstration to come to the Minister of Education so that they can hear our cry that we are tired of interview. They can come up with something so that because for now we give our petition to them. They are busy with it. We are waiting for them. We are hoping they are coming back with a good response so that maybe we can feel better because we are tired. We are crying. We do not have money. Please, they can hear us.
Now, what do you think the education sector can do to ensure that you are all considered for unemployment, not just some, not just the nepotism people, but also like all of you here at this protest and all unemployed teachers?
At least they can come up with, like what we suggest them, they come up with a mass recruitment. Maybe we can fill up our form and then we give them to the ministry, whether in Windhoek, those who are in Windhoek, they can hand up in Windhoek, or Angwena, or Shikoto, they can do the same. And then when there is a post come up with, they must just take that form that we hand up, and then they can call us one by one. Because these things, they are costing a lot for the copies and then the transport money. They can hear that.
Thank you so much for speaking to us. Would you like to say one last thing?
One last thing, maybe for the Ministry of Education. We just want them to hear our cry and then they can respond to the do our petition in a good way so that we can, because we give them the 48 hours, if they did not come up with a good answer, we have to come up here and then to camp at the Ministry of Education in Commerce.
Thank you so much.
Right, there you had it. Also, to continue with this, Petrus as well engaged with a chairperson of unemployed, unemployment qualified teachers, just to share her take. Let's take a listen.
Now, Joyce, just to get our conversation started, what motivated the decision to organize today's protest, and how would you describe the overall response from the unemployed teacher graduates across the country?
The demonstration was motivated by a long-standing people graduated long time without employment, and corruption and nepotism is the song of the ministry, which is leaving thousands of qualified teachers without jobs. Yes, and the overall response from unemployed teachers, some of the people traveled from other regions to come to Windhoek for the peaceful demonstration, which shows that it's only not only one region, but this problem countrywide. Yes.
Now, during the board meeting, which the media was excused from, you had a meeting with the vice minister, I believe, or am I mistaken?
No, he's the executive director, Mr. Puri.
Yes. Can you share what was discussed in that closed door session? Was there any resolution? Was a compromise reached? What happened?
We presented our concern directly to the executive director, Mr. Giri and Ms. Aisha, about the growing number of unemployed teachers and the recruitment process, which needs an urgent intervention in the Ministry of Education. Okay. While we appreciate the ministry listening to us, there was no concrete solution which was given to us. Yeah. So the ministry offered us 3 months for them to finish preparing and to give us a better solution, but we refused. We gave them 4 weeks to come back to us. So the unemployed teachers are stressed because they have been patient waiting for too long without any change. We told the Minister of Education who came to the ministry after these 4 weeks.
Okay, now with the number of, you know, unemployed teachers now reaching over 15,000, what do you believe is at the core of this issue, and how is it impacted by both morale and trust in the system?
The core issue in the system has failed unemployed teachers. And also the Ministry of Education lack both the will and the proper framework to give us the job.
Continue.
And the problem has worsened in the Ministry of Education for several reasons. And poor planning education is a song of the ministry. Morale among unemployed teachers is extremely low because many unemployed teachers feel abandoned by the ministry, and we have lost trust in the Ministry of Education and the recruitment process.
Now, Joyce, in your previous answer, you mentioned the possibility of a peaceful 48-hour camp outside the Ministry of Education. What do you hope this form of action will communicate to the government and the public as well?
Camping is a peaceful form of demonstration which show a reminder to the Ministry of Education that our issue needs an urgent and cannot be ignored anymore. We want the ministry to see the statistics of unemployed teachers, which is about almost 15,000. As unemployed teachers, we are alive and real future, and we are real educators, and we are ready to serve in the Ministry of Education. Yes.
Now, to end of our discussion, you know, in your opinion, what urgent steps must the Ministry of Education take to begin addressing these concerns, you know, and ensuring the qualified teachers are fairly considered for employment?
We need the Ministry of Education to recruit mass recruitment and for us to abolish the interview, because the interview is a barrier for unemployed teachers, because there is no fair and transparent in recruiting the teachers in the Ministry of Education. And the Ministry of Education must ensure that they must allocate adequate budget and resources to create a new force for unemployed teachers.
Now, Joyce, to end of our conversation, would you like to say something else? Would you like to add something?
I just want to tell the Ministry of Education that we only give them 4 weeks. So if they don't come back to us within that 4 weeks, we just come camp at the Ministry of Education until we receive a positive answer. And until all of us we are recruited is when we go home. Otherwise, we will stay at the Ministry of Education until all of us get a job.
Okay, thank you so much, Joyce. It was great speaking to you.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, goodbye.
Bye.
All right, there you had it. Furthermore, we might take a listen to what the Ministry of Education has responded to the petition or their demand, actually.
We have also met with your leadership and we received the petition and we will acknowledge receipt and communicate subsequently. Now, relating to the proposed camping that you mentioned, you must follow all the legal framework that is in place before you get to that point. All the permissions, all the permits, all the letters must be channeled and your leadership is aware on what to do. Then a decision will be reached subsequently by those authorities where you submit your documents and we will communicate with an acknowledgement letter still today on the petition that was delivered and we will communicate subsequently to your leadership. As an additional measure, I'm inviting your chairperson, the deputy chairperson, and five others of your committee to just come into the boardroom that's close by so that we just set into motion what the following steps will be. So, Ms. Liswan Misa and Ms. Kamati and five of your members can join us in the boardroom. Thank you for your orderly conduct so far. We request you to do everything within the confines of the law, remain disciplined, and also when you disperse, to disperse orderly subsequently. Thank you. I now invite the leadership of the organization to come to the boardroom. Thank you.
All right, the time is 15 minutes in the hour of 7 o'clock and this is early morning scoop. Now to move on to the next item is that the NFA has officially revealed the Brive Warriors squad that will be traveling to South Africa for the 2025 Hollywood Bets CASAFA Cup. Now the national soccer team has struggled to win a silver war for a while and some experts have attributed that over the years the country's domestic league was not very active, no competitiveness to keep players active. However, this has changed significantly over the past 2 years. Now to hear more about Namibians' preparation and readiness, we have engaged our internal sport analyst Hende Walenga on this. We might take a listen.
We are now joined by our sports reporter Hende to discuss the Brave Warriors' participation at the 2025 CASAFA Championship. Now, Hende, who are we facing in this CASAFA?
So we're going to start off the competition against our favorite opponent, Angola. Mm-hmm. On Thursday, that will be at 6 o'clock at the Toyota Stadium. And then on the 8th of June, we'll face off against Malawi. That will be at the Petrus Molemela Stadium. And we round off the group fixtures on the 10th of June against Lesotho back at the Toyota Stadium at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Great. Now looking at the team, you know, selected, what is your take? How is our prospect looking?
I think we have a pretty decent squad. I mean, a lot of skillful players in the team, a lot of youngsters coming up, the likes of Mbakonja, mix of experienced players as well as the always steady Hambira there at the back, who most likely will be the captain. Mm-hmm. Also, Awilo there in the team, which is, you know, everyone's favorite in the squad. Mm. And we have guys like, Muzeu, who plays over in South Africa. So I think we have a decent balance between up-and-coming youngsters and experienced Namibian footballers in the squad.
Right. Now, looking at how, you know, competitive domestic leagues have been, do you think we stand a better chance this time?
Yeah, I think, like I said earlier, I think we have a good chance in this year's competition. Mm-hmm. I'm really pleased with the squad selection. It's a mixture of local and international players, predominantly local players, of course. But, you know, your likes of Moses Shidolo, your likes of Jocelyn Kamutuka. Mm-hmm. I think we have a good balance of the squad. And those that are coming from the local league, they've been performing well in the league. So I think, we're in a good place in the competition.
Now, speaking of that, now, you know, SA has hosted all the major sports tournaments, you know, in the region for all these years because its sports infrastructure and benefits, you know, come from sports spillovers. Do you think the government must fast track its sports infrastructure investment?
Yeah, I don't think fast tracking would make any difference. I mean, South Africa is hosting this because, as you mentioned, the large infrastructure that they have all over the country. You know, it took years for them to get to that point. We're basically starting from ground zero. But you know, the plans that we've heard now a lot about, what the government has about building infrastructure in all the regions. Once all of that is completed, that would put us in a good position to be able to host games such as this. But I don't think that that fast tracking it would make much of a difference. It will take time regardless. Yes.
Well, thank you so much for that update, Hende. Thank you for coming onto the show.
Thank you for having me.
Okay.
Right, there you had it. Now to move on to the next item, which will be the last update of the day, is that Namibia and Zambia were offered stakes in the Lobito refinery by Angola, but the Namibian government has not publicly expressed interest in the purchasing a stake. Now the Ministry of Mines under Tom Arendo has made various visits to Angola, but the Namibian public has yet to receive any response from the cabinet. Now, my colleague Pete Moshela Lukalo brought us this update. You might take a listen.
Good morning, Eagle FM listeners. Thank you for tuning in for our good morning section. Namibia and Zambia were offered stakes in the Lobito refinery by Angola, but Namibia government has not made it public that they are interested that they will be buying a stake. However, they keep chasing those tungu or of the Ngungula in Oshikango for fuel. The Ministry of Mines under Tom Arendo made various visits to Angola, but Namibia received no response from the cabinet to date. Today on this conversation, we are going to speak to Mr. Teboho Junior Marshall Namteha, a businessman in the retailer petroleum retailer, sorry. Good morning, Mr. Namteha.
Good morning, Pat, and good morning to the Energy Radio FM listeners, and thank you.
Mr. Namteha, why do you think oil refinery conversation becoming more important now?
Thank you, Pat. The oil refinery conversation is an interesting one, and it has become very much important, especially when the SADC region is looking to diversify and to also secure the energy needs that the countries in the SADC region really need. Developing a cross-border refinery between Namibia and Botswana could have a profound regional and economic implication. Mm-hmm. And the benefits that we could see for Namibia partnering with Botswana are quite immense. I could mention a few of them if you allow.
Are the outlay of building one is it quite huge according to the research? Why is the collaboration key in this between Namibia and Botswana?
The collaboration is actually a good thing that SADC or African countries should really be looking into, especially between Namibia and Botswana. One, Namibia itself does not have its own refinery, and it has been importing a lot of refined petroleum products, as well as Botswana. And Botswana and Namibia as developing countries can benefit from each other in the sense that Namibia would be diversifying its economy, and that refinery would actually help Namibia move beyond just the raw export once we have, you know, reached first oil. As you know, Namibia now is the hot the hotspot for oil exploration. So once Namibia has moved past exploring oil and gas, it will move from just exporting those raw materials to developing value in the industry. And as we sit, construction, operation, and indirect logistics and services will develop around the sector. There will be employment opportunities for both Namibians and Botswana. And looking at the aspect of the energy security, Namibia would be resolving the issue of importing a lot of this refined product, as well as increasing a domestic or creating this joint energy refinery will reduce dependency on external suppliers, not only for Namibia, but for the SADC region. And collaborating with Botswana brings about a pool of resources, both the Namibian financial resources as the Botswana financial strength can put together all the financial resources and develop this hugely expensive infrastructure that is required for refining energy. Now, Botswana as a strategic partner will come in as Botswana itself does not have its own oil. And it's already importing a lot of this oil from Namibia. So Botswana presents itself as a direct and as an immediate consumer of this product refined from the Namibian side. Not only Botswana is a direct importer or a potential uptaker of this refined product, Botswana sits in the center of SADC, and Botswana can bring about logistical infrastructure to help Namibia export most of its refined oil to the other extent of SADC to reach areas in, as far as Mozambique, Zimbabwe, and Zambia. So Botswana has already invested a lot in its infrastructure, considering the Trans-Kalahari Railway line, and Botswana's recently developed strategic storage facilities, which are envisioning receiving refined products or imported products through the Budapest and the Trans-Kalahari corridor.
Okay. Looking at the Angola vast crude reserve, will it not be strategic for Namibia and Botswana to have a stake in the proposal Liberty refinery?
I believe that for Namibia, it's actually very, very important that as an upcoming oil producing nation, that they should look into diversifying and actually be more than just a raw importer of this oil. We need to establish the infrastructure in Namibia so that Namibia can benefit directly from the taxes and the export duties and the profits that will come from developing the refinery. Not only will Namibia benefit from having its own refinery, look, infrastructure development and direct job creation will be done and it will be based in Namibia. Compared to if Namibia takes its resources and its raw oil, exporting it to the Angolan side. So it's essentially, if you consider the Botswana, Namibia, collaboration and the Angola-Namibia collaboration, Namibia would essentially be giving away the potential to establish the much-needed jobs, and it will also be giving away the potential government revenue that can come from all the taxes and export duties. So I think at this stage, we have to prioritize, you know, the long-term benefit of actually having your own refinery versus investing in Angola.
Okay, for you as a consumer, given the opportunity, what advice will you give to the Namibian government in regards to penetrating with Botswana or Angola refinery?
As a consumer, I mean, my key interest would be fuel affordability, reliability, the quality. And the only advice that I can give is that for the Namibian government and the Botswana government, we need to prioritize long-term cost reduction and ensure that the partnership results in lower fuel prices for us as consumers, whether it's Botswana consumers or the Namibian consumers. We need to reduce the transport and the import markup that we are seeing, that we spoke of, that the article now that was just that just came up recently shows that the price parity or the comparison between imported final price or pump price versus what Angola is now giving to its people. The gap is so huge. Mm-hmm. So if we can focus on reducing the price for the consumer, mm-hmm. and we ensure that the Namibian government and the Botswana government is transparent and is accountable, mm-hmm. so and avoid corruption and mismanagement, mm-hmm. and give information to the people and the stakeholders and any other investor mm-hmm. on time, so that we reduce that frustration that I'm sensing from some articles regarding this conversation. Mm-hmm. And we also need to have a sense of, you know, fair negotiation and ownership and access. Make sure that Namibia has equal and a majority control, especially if the refinery is going to be located in the Namibian soil. Mm-hmm. So we need to actually make sure that the Namibians benefit from direct employment, they benefit from the infrastructure development that comes in, mm-hmm. and that we must also demand an environmental and social safeguard, that everything that is surrounding the refinery, mm-hmm. whether it's Botswana or Namibia, whatever it is, mm-hmm. thorough studies that affect environmental impact are done, and we do not compromise on air, water, or public health. Mm-hmm. So we also need to foster the local content. We must, when we think about the refinery and its development, we need to seriously delve in policies that will influence whether our people, how our people get trained, how our people are equipped with skills in order to be able to work and run these refineries. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you compare the partnership with Angola once again, the Angolans are already trained. The Angolans already have created employment for their own people. Mm-hmm. So it's now Namibia's turn to take full advantage of its oil from raw materials until the materials are refined in order to assure local content policies that actually benefit the Namibians, and actually maintaining strategic reserves and ensure regional access of this fuel stockpiles or the fuel that would have been refined from Namibia. Also, I believe it's very, very key that the Namibia should take advantage of that potential that Botswana has as a regional hub of transport and access to market. Because once you have refined the product, you actually need to find the market for the product. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Teboho. Before we close up, maybe I should not close you off. Is there anything else maybe that you want to add or to say before I close you off?
At the end of the day, I just wanted to mention that, well, Botswana has a lot to offer as a partner. I, being from Botswana and doing retail in Botswana, mm-hmm. I can just name this 4 or 5 points that Botswana has a strong demand base. So it's going to be a good partner for Namibia. As a landlocked country with no refinery of our own, we rely heavily already on the Walvis Bay, and most of our imports are coming in from Namibia. Mm-hmm. We are also a strategic location, central node, and access to any other Southern African country that you have. Public policy infrastructure commitment, Botswana has aggressively developed fuel security policies, including the expansion of its strategic fuel reserves in major cities, including the one at Chibokwane, which is 90 kilometers from the Namibia-Botswana border, and is envisioning to pull up as much from Namibia. Botswana also stands as an investment, it brings in investment capacity and political stability to the coalition or the collaboration between its Namibian counterpart. Also, the existing partnerships between Botswana and Namibia are what we can take a ride on, considering that the infrastructure development, once again, of the Trans-Kalahari Railway line that is leading from the Walvis Bay into Botswana and all the way to Durban and other important areas in SADC are key areas to consider.
All right, there you had it. Thank you so much for joining us today, and that was that marked our last item of the day. Thank you so much for tuning in. This was Early Morning Skip. Thank you so much, and I wish you luck to also listen to all the programs today. Please stay tuned. With us to all the programs. Thank you so much. We really, really appreciate you for always staying tuned and always choosing us. And from me, Lois Shimi, I wish you a good day ahead.
Omutia utekirwa kaguna I matina omjo. Chikao shafa sana na nongeshifa ya eshiwike moshiwana. iyemo yao otaingongotitha mwene anangeshefa ya Namibia ompito ombwanawa olonjika seithanena omayakulo niilandithomwa yoye yongeshefa yoye okupitila mo Eagle FM Media House ngoye tuende twiimemeha uuka kombaanga nena kala omukwashipaleki gwimwepo yomooprograma detu moambo dhengela Selma onola hetatu imwe 33 765 oniyali Eagle FM the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are the Elsine Hangano, the Osherero Omaimburiro, the Catholic Simane Kakarunga, the Afrikaans Sing Voor Diere, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-238-063. You can also email us at digital@omalighty.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.